Chapter 127. Chronicles the further proceedings of the Nickleby family, and the sequel of the adventure of the gentleman in the small clothes, while Nicholas, absorbed in the one engrossing subject of interest which had recently opened upon him, occupied his leisure hours with thoughts of Madeline Bray, and in execution of the commissions which the anxiety of Brother Charles in her behalf imposed upon him, saw her again and again, and each time with greater danger to his peace of mind, and a more weakening effect upon the lofty resolutions he had formed. Mrs. Nickleby and Kate continued to live in peace and quiet, agitated by no other cares than those which were connected with certain harassing proceedings taken by Mr. Snawley for the recovery of his son, and their anxiety for Smike himself, whose health, long upon the wane, began to be so much affected by apprehension and uncertainty as sometimes to occasion both them and Nicholas considerable uneasiness, and even alarm. It was no complaint or murmur on the part of the poor fellow himself that thus disturbed them. Ever eager to be employed in such slight services as he could render, and always anxious to repay his benefactors with cheerful and happy looks, less friendly eyes might have seen in him no cause for any misgiving. But there were times, and often too, when the sunken eye was too bright, the hollow cheek too flushed, the breath too thick and heavy in its course, the frame too feeble and exhausted, to escape their regard and notice. There is a dread disease which so prepares its victim, as it were, for death, which so refines it of its grosser aspect, and throws around familiar looks unearthly indications of the coming change. A dread disease, in which the struggle between soul and body is so gradual, quiet, and solemn, and the result so sure, that day by day, and grain by grain, the mortal part wastes and withers away, so that the spirit grows light, and sanguine with its lightening load, and, feeling immortality at hand, deems it but a new term of mortal life. A disease in which death and life are so strangely blended, that death takes the glow and hue of life, and life the gaunt and grisly form of death. A disease which medicine never cured, wealth never warded off, or poverty could boast exemption from, which sometimes moves in giant strides, and sometimes at a tardy sluggish pace, but, slow or quick, is ever sure and certain. It was with some faint reference in his own mind to this disorder, though he would by no means admit it, even to himself, that Nicholas had already carried his faithful companion to a physician of great repute. There was no cause for immediate alarm, he said. There were no present symptoms which could be deemed conclusive. The constitution had been greatly tried and injured in childhood, but still it might not be, and that was all. But he seemed to grow no worse, and, as it was not difficult to find a reason for these symptoms of illness in the shock and agitation he had recently undergone, Nicholas comforted himself with the hope that his poor friend would soon recover. This hope his mother and sister shared with him, and as the object of their joint solicitude seemed to have no uneasiness or despondency for himself, but each day answered with a quiet smile, that he felt better than he had upon the day before, their fears abated, and the general happiness was by degrees restored. Many and many a time in after years did Nicholas look back to this period of his life, and tread again the humble, quiet, homely scenes that rose up, as of old, before him. Many and many a time, in the twilight of a summer evening, or beside the flickering winter's fire, but not so often or so sadly then would his thoughts wander back to these old days, and dwell with a pleasant sorrow upon every slight remembrance which they brought crowding home. The little room in which they had, so often sat long after it was dark, figuring such happy futures, Kate's cheerful voice and merry laugh. How, if she were from home, they used to sit, and watch for her return scarcely breaking silence, but to say how dull it seemed without her, the glee with which poor Smike would start from the darkened corner, where he used to sit, and hurry to admit her, and the tears they often saw upon his face, half wondering to see them too, and he so pleased and happy. Every little incident, and even slight words and looks of those old days little heeded then, but well remembered when busy cares and trials were quite forgotten, came fresh and thick before him many and many a time, and, rustling above the moldy growth of years, came back green boughs of yesterday. But there were other persons associated with these recollections, and many changes came about before they had being. A necessary reflection for the purposes of these adventures, which at once subside into their accustomed train, and shunning all flighty anticipations or wayward wanderings, pursue their steady and decorous course. If the brothers cheerable, as they found Nicholas worthy of trust and confidence, bestowed upon him every day some new and substantial mark of kindness, they were not less mindful of those who depended on him. Various little presents to Mrs. Nickleby, always of the very things they most required, tended in no slight degree to the improvement and embellishment of the cottage. Kate's little store of trinkets became quite dazzling, and for company. If Brother Charles and Brother Ned failed to look in for at least a few minutes every Sunday, or one evening in the week, there was Mr. Tim Linkinwater, who had never made half a dozen other acquaintances in all his life, and who took such delight in his new friends as no words can express, constantly coming and going in his evening walks, and stopping to rest, while Mr. Frank Cheerable happened, by some strange conjunction of circumstances, to be passing the door on some business, or other at least 3 nights in the week. He is the most attentive young man I ever saw, Kate, apostrophe said Mrs. Nickleby to her daughter one evening, when this last-named gentleman had been the subject of the worthy lady's eulogium for some time, and Kate had sat perfectly silent. Attentive, mamma. Apostrophe, rejoined Kate. Bless my heart, Kate. Apostrophe, cried Mrs. Nickleby, with her wonted suddenness, what a color you have got, why, you're quite flushed. Apostrophe, oh, mamma, what strange things you fancy. Apostrophe, it wasn't fancy, Kate, my dear, I'm certain of that, apostrophe returned her mother. However, it's gone now at any rate, so it don't much matter whether it was or not. What was it we were talking about? Oh, Mr. Frank. I never saw such attention in my life, never. Apostrophe, surely you are not serious, apostrophe returned Kate, coloring again, and this time beyond all dispute. Not serious. Apostrophe returned Mrs. Nickleby. Why shouldn't I be serious? I'm sure I never was more serious. I will say, that his politeness and attention to me is one of the most becoming, gratifying, pleasant things I have seen for a very long time. You don't often meet with such behavior in young men, and it strikes one more, when one does meet with it. Apostrophe, oh, attention to you, mamma, apostrophe rejoined Kate quickly, oh yes. Apostrophe, dear me. Kate, apostrophe retorted Mrs. Nickleby, what an extraordinary girl you are. Was it likely I should be talking of his attention to anybody else? I declare I'm quite sorry to think he should be in love with a German lady, that I am. Apostrophe, he said very positively, that it was no such thing, mamma, apostrophe returned Kate. Don't you remember his saying, so that very first night he came here? Besides, apostrophe she added, in a more gentle tone, why should we be sorry, if it is the case? What is it to us, mamma? Apostrophe, nothing to us, Kate, perhaps, apostrophe said Mrs. Nickleby, emphatically, but something to me, I confess. I like English people, to be thorough English people, and not half English and half I don't know what. I shall tell him point blank next time he comes, that I wish he would marry one of his own countrywomen, and see what he says to that. Apostrophe, pray don't think of such a thing, mamma, apostrophe returned Kate, hastily, not for the world. Consider, how very apostrophe, well, my dear, how very what? Apostrophe said Mrs. Nickleby, opening her eyes in great astonishment. Before Kate had returned any reply, a queer little double knock announced that Miss La Creevy had called to see them, and when Miss La Creevy presented herself, Mrs. Nickleby, though strongly disposed to be argumentative on the previous question, forgot all about it in a gush of supposes about the coach she had come by, supposing that the man who drove must have been either the man in the shirt sleeves or the man with the black eye, that whoever he was, he hadn't found that parasol she left inside last week, that no doubt they had stopped day long while at the halfway house, coming down, or that perhaps being full, they had come straight on, and, lastly, that they, surely, must have passed Nicholas on the road. I saw nothing of him, apostrophe answered Miss La Creevy, but I saw that dear old soul Mr. Linkinwater, apostrophe, taking his evening walk, and coming on to rest here, before he turns back to the city, I'll be bound. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mrs. Nickleby. I should think he was, apostrophe, returned Miss La Creevy, especially as young Mr. Cheerable was with him. Apostrophe, surely that is no reason why Mr. Linkinwater should be coming here, apostrophe, said Kate. Why, I think it is, my dear, apostrophe, said Miss La Creevy. For a young man, Mr. Frank is not a very great walker, and I observe that he generally falls tired and requires a good long rest when he has come as far as this. But where is my friend? Apostrophe, said the little woman, looking about, after having glanced slyly at Kate. He has not been run away with again, has he? Apostrophe, apostrophe, ah. Where is Mr. Smike? Apostrophe, said Mrs. Nickleby. He was here this instant. Apostrophe, upon further inquiry, it turned out, to the good lady's unbounded astonishment, that Smike had, that moment, gone upstairs to bed. Well now, apostrophe, said Mrs. Nickleby, he is the strangest creature. Last Tuesday was a Tuesday? Yes, to be sure it was. You recollect, Kate, my dear, the very last time young Mr. Cheerable was here last Tuesday night he went off in just the same strange way, at the very moment the knock came to the door. It cannot be that he don't like company, because he is always fond of people who are fond of Nicholas, and I am sure young Mr. Cheerable is. And the strangest thing is, that he does not go to bed, therefore it cannot be because he is tired. I know he doesn't go to bed, because my room is the next one, and when I went upstairs last Tuesday, hours after him, I found that he had not even taken his shoes off. And he had no candle, so he must have sat moping in the dark all the time. Now, upon my word, apostrophe, said Mrs. Nickleby, when I come to think of it, that's very extraordinary. Apostrophe, apostrophe, as the hearers did not echo this sentiment, but remained profoundly silent, either as not knowing what to say, or as being unwilling to interrupt, Mrs. Nickleby pursued the thread of her discourse after her own fashion. I hope, apostrophe, said that lady, that this unaccountable conduct may not be the beginning of his taking to his bed, and living there all his life, like the thirsty woman of Tutbury, or the Cock Lane ghost, or some of those extraordinary creatures. One of them had some connection with our family. I forget, without looking back to some old letters I have upstairs, whether it was my great-grandfather who went to school with the Cock Lane ghost, or the thirsty woman of Tutbury who went to school with my grandmother. Miss La Creevy, you know, of course. Which was it that didn't mind what the clergyman said? The Cock Lane ghost or the thirsty woman of Tutbury? Apostrophe, the Cock Lane ghost, I believe. Apostrophe, then I have no doubt, apostrophe, said Mrs. Nickleby, that it was with him my great-grandfather went to school, for I know the master of his school was a dissenter, and that would, in a great measure, account for the Cock Lane ghost's behaving in such an improper manner to the clergyman when he grew up. Ah! Train up a ghost child, I mean apostrophe, any further reflections on this fruitful theme were abruptly cut short by the arrival of Tim Linkinwater and Mr. Frank Cheerable, in the hurry of receiving whom, Mrs. Nickleby speedily lost sight of everything else. I am so sorry Nicholas is not at home, apostrophe, said Mrs. Nickleby. Kate, my dear, you must be both Nicholas and yourself. Apostrophe, Miss Nickleby need be but herself, apostrophe said Frank. I, if I may venture to say so, oppose all change in her. Apostrophe, then at all events she shall press you to stay, apostrophe returned Mrs. Nickleby. Mr. Linkinwater says 10 minutes, but I cannot let you go so soon. Nicholas would be very much vexed, I am sure. Kate, my dear. Apostrophe, apostrophe, in obedience to a great number of nods, and winks, and frowns of extra significance, Kate added her entreaties that the visitors would remain, but it was observable that she addressed them exclusively to Tim Linkinwater, and there was, besides, a certain embarrassment in her manner, which, although it was as far from impairing its graceful character as the tinge it communicated to her cheek, was from diminishing her beauty, was obvious at a glance even to Mrs. Nickleby. Not being of a very speculative character, however, save under circumstances when her speculations could be put into words and uttered aloud, that discreet matron attributed the emotion to the circumstance of her daughter's not happening to have her best frock on. Though I never saw her look better, certainly, apostrophe she reflected at the same time. Having settled the question in this way, and being most complacently satisfied that in this, and in all other instances, her conjecture could not fail to be the right one, Mrs. Nickleby dismissed it from her thoughts, and inwardly congratulated herself on being so shrewd and knowing. Nicholas did not come home, nor did Smike reappear, but neither circumstance, to say the truth, had any great effect upon the little party, who were all in the best humor possible. Indeed, there sprung up quite a flirtation between Miss La Creevy and Tim Linkinwater, who said 1,000 jocose and facetious things, and became, by degrees, quite gallant, not to say tender. Little Miss La Creevy, on her part, was in high spirits, and rallied Tim on having remained a bachelor all his life with so much success, that Tim was actually induced to declare that if he could get anybody to have him, he didn't know but what he might change his condition even yet. Miss La Creevy earnestly recommended a lady she knew, who would exactly suit Mr. Linkinwater, and had a very comfortable property of her own. But this latter qualification had very little effect upon Tim, who manfully protested that fortune would be no object with him, but that true worth and cheerfulness of disposition were what a man should look for in a wife, and that if he had these, he could find money enough for the moderate wants of both. This avowal was considered so honorable to Tim, that neither Mrs. Nickleby nor Miss La Creevy could sufficiently extol it, and stimulated by their praises, Tim launched out into several other declarations also manifesting the disinterestedness of his heart, and a great devotion to the fair sex, which were received with no less approbation. This was done, and said with a comical mixture of jest and earnest, and, leading to a great amount of laughter, made them very merry indeed. Kate was commonly the life and soul of the conversation at home. But she was more silent than usual upon this occasion, perhaps, because Tim and Miss La Creevy engrossed so much of it, and, keeping aloof from the talkers, sat at the window watching the shadows as the evening closed in, and enjoying the quiet beauty of the night, which seemed to have scarcely less attractions to Frank, who first lingered near, and then sat down beside her. No doubt, there are a great many things to be said appropriate to a summer evening, and no doubt they are best said in a low voice, as being most suitable to Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.